Testing, 1, 2, 3. Testing.
Testing.
Okay, thanks, Lori. I want to call the House Transportation Committee to order at 1:32. And members present are Representative Coring, Kastner, Fate, Vice Chair Masick, Co-Chair Holmes, and today I'll be chairing the meeting, and we have one bill that we will be hearing today, and that's House Bill 67. And we have Barbara Cotting, staff for Representative Holmes, to give us a short sponsor statement.
Very short. I expect everybody in this room knows more about this bill than I do. I did deliver today some additional packet information, in that you'll find a revised fiscal note from DOT and a short summary of the St. Mary's Force Account Project and a statement of opposition from Alaska Municipal League and a statement of support from Associated Builders and Contractors. So you should have all that in your packets. Just very, very briefly, this bill is to address a problem that everybody recognizes exists. We're not quite sure where to go with it as far as a total solution. But Alaska statute right now requires that construction and maintenance be done by competitive bid, except in the case of very small projects where the state is allowed to use force accounts. And force accounts means, apparently from what I could gather, that the state uses its own forces to do the work rather than going out to competitive bid. But instead of just confining this to small projects, over the years, many large projects have been done by the state using the force account method. And from Representative Holmes' point of view, who sponsored this bill, and other people, what that does is it takes all those dollars out of the private sector, out of the industry. It also requires the state to maintain a lot of expensive equipment and maintain trained personnel year-round. And particularly removes those projects from oversight by the public and removes the transparency that they should be able to have. And with that, I'd be very glad to end my testimony, and I suspect Representative Holm would be willing to answer your questions.
Okay, thank you, Barbara Cotting. And I would like
Barbara.
To recognize that Representative Kukesh is with us. Did you have a question?
Yes.
For Barb or for the sponsor?
Either one, she made the statement, so I'm willing to ask her if she wants to take it.
Sure, I'll try. Like I said, probably everybody in the room knows more about this bill than I do.
Well, you mentioned specifically that many large projects have been done on force account. Name one.
St. Mary's, for one, which you have in your packet.
Uh-huh. On that point,
Representative Kastner.
Thank you. My understanding was that really this wasn't a large project. I mean, a large project to me means, you know, like Egan Drive. That would be a large project in my mind. St. Mary's was just, I think, a $1 million project. So I think we should be clear in what large means. My understanding is that force account in the state, and I'm sure DOT will have, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities will be joining us at some point, but my understanding is that force account only comprises 2.2 to 3% of our total DOT budget. And to me, that's just not even a sliver of the pie, it's crumbs off the pie. So I guess I'd like to know what in your mind constitutes a large project.
Representative Holmes?
Yes, I'd like to respond to that, please. The total cost of the project of St. Mary's was $2,470,000, which isn't a little project. And this particular issue has to do with really the application of funds and how funds are spent. If you'll look back in your packets, and I have to get it, there is you should have a list of state projects that have been given through the process over the past few years. Now, let me find that very quickly.
Is this it?
It's the DOT force account here.
Mm-hmm.
What I did is I went through here and I figured out where the money was really going. And if you'll look at fiscal year 2002, item number one is preventive maintenance, and this is what this is really aimed at, is preventative maintenance that is presumed by DOT to spend whenever they choose to spend it. And in this case, it's $8,860,000 for the Northern Region. And I understand the idea that the DOT does not particularly want somebody looking over their shoulder and telling them what to spend money on, but as a contractor, and having been a contractor for many, many years, I think regardless of what kind of money you're talking about, this one, the bill is talking about $250,000 limit, and $250,000 to me ain't chicken feed. I mean, it's a lot of money, and I know most people that are in my business would bid on any job $250,000 or less in the bush doing what I do for a living. And I think that of all the people that I talk to, if a job was much more than $100,000, that they would certainly apply to do it. Several of the issues that have come up that are probably not even in here are things like the state of Alaska owns an awful lot of equipment that it pays for out of the Equipment Highway Fund, and though not, I don't know a whole lot about it, I know that in this particular case of St. Mary's, where they had the city of St. Mary's buy the equipment, the state of Alaska leased it back, and then at the end of the project, the city of St. Mary's owned all the equipment. And I don't begrudge anyone from being able to improve their town's financial position, but I think it's not in the best interest of the state in total to do those kinds of projects out of the eye of the transparency, if you will, of the state process. And so I like the competitive bid process, and I'd like to keep it very consistent.
Representative Faton and Kastner.
Well, I just noticed that in the language itself, in this proposed amendment to 1910-170A, the word large I can't see occurs. It's basically a matter of what figure you want as the cap.
That's correct.
As I understand it. And that is the guts of the amendment as to whether it should be a cap of $250,000 or more or less. So I'm of the mind that any debate that I would have is to the merits of the $250,000. Why that was chosen as the figure, because it's not that I'm uncomfortable with it, it's just that there's got to be some measure of why we came up with this figure.
Well, through the chair, please, Madam Chair. The figure was not pulled from the air. There was an awful lot of work done on this same type of bill last year out of Senator Cowdery's office, as I recall, and he does have a companion bill as well in the Senate, SB 40, and it also uses the same number of $250,000, and that was done for the purpose to try and keep it at a consistent level. I don't know that there's a basis for $249,005 or any other kind of number we could come up with, but that seemed to be a consensus of a good number to use. Excuse me. To add to that, I understand last year as it went through the process, it even got extended or a raise even up to $1 million to get it through the House. I believe this went through the House last year. Is that right? Or
that's correct.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Did it? It didn't pass.
But it had changed like from $250,000 to up to $1 million. And so, you know, it's a starting point. It's a place to start with. But for purposes of discussion, that's where we settled.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Kastner and then Kukesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to know what kind of projects get done in the state for $250,000. I'm sure you can do a lot more in Anchorage for $250 or Fairbanks than you could say in Tintituliak, but I'd be curious to know what projects get done for that amount of money.
I guess we can refer that to DOT when they come to the table. Representative Kukesh.
Thank you. My question, I guess, is to Mr. Holm, the co-chair of the committee. I was wondering, sir, if you could tell me what is in the best interest of the people in the state of Alaska. Having something like this on a force account that puts a lot of jobs in a local area that normally wouldn't have those jobs, or limiting this to $250,000, which benefits those people who can afford bonding in the state, and who people like yourself who will benefit having the benefit of the limitation.
Representative Cookes, I'm not sure that I can even comment on that, primarily because I don't claim that I speak for all of the people of the state of Alaska. However, to assume that I would benefit personally.
Well, you said that yourself. I'm just saying that.
Excuse me. Through the chair. The possibility of bidding on jobs is not a personal reason for limiting this. The reason that I would like to have this limited is so that anyone, I do not personally deal with asphalt or anything of those nature. In this particular case, a great number of these dollars were for preventive maintenance and mostly in roads and those types of things, which I personally have no stake in at all. And the northern region is where the majority of this money was expended, and I know that they go out and they do a lot of things, but also they do them here in the Juneau area in with regards to paving even the streets of Juneau. So I can't respond to the representative's thoughts about where there's right or wrong about who should benefit whatsoever. I just believe that we should have it in the public bidding process.
Did you have a follow-up?
And I appreciate his answer, because I know he's answered you for all the people of the state. But in terms of the public good and what we're going to do with this, you know, Governor Murkowski, when he made a state of the state, wanted to do something for economic benefit in the state. And if you want to have economic benefit in the state, my thinking is that you do what the DOT did in this case, where somebody like St. Mary's, and I've never been to St. Mary's, don't know anybody in St. Mary's, had a benefit of jobs, equipment, and where else would that equipment go? If you pass something like this, it keeps all of that money in the contractor who comes in, does a job, and leaves. So I'm just trying to find out whether this is in the best interest of the state or not, and I'm trying to find an answer. I'm willing to vote for this if it's in the best interest of the state, but I'm trying to figure out for myself, where is it? And I'm willing to be convinced.
Representative Cookes, as we move farther on with the bill, I'm sure a lot of these questions will surface, and hopefully the answers will, with the testimony that we'll be getting in. So I would recommend that for purposes of getting this bill moving along, I would like to have the committee debate it, but then I'd like to open it up because we do have a lot of people that want to testify, both from DOT on through the private sector that want to give their testimony on the bill, so I'm going to refer to any farther comments. But Representative Kastner, did you have
thank you, Madam Chair.
Point or?
Yeah, in recognition of what you just said, I'll withhold my questions until we hear from DOT and ask them directly to DOT. Thank you.
Okay, I think that would be a lot better. So I'm going to go ahead then and move on to testimony and. I guess I have all the off-nets and the Anchorage LIO, but is there someone here from DOT that signed up? I don't have the sign-up sheet, but Dennis Prichard.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Dennis Prichard. I'm with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I'm a Special Assistant to the Commissioner. I've also got a couple of other DOT folks with me here today to help me answer some of the questions that are likely to come up.
Would you like to introduce them right now?
Sure.
This
is Mark O'Brien. He's the Chief Contracts Officer for the Alaska Department of Transportation. And also here is Frank Richards. He's the State Maintenance Engineer for the State of Alaska. I guess, first of all, I'd like to state pretty clearly up front that the new administration hasn't yet taken a position on this bill and is reviewing right now the Administrative Order 199 and trying to decide what kind of position and they're going to take on the issue of force account. But a couple of other things I'd like to point out is that of the total amount of our capital program each year that we have, this bill is actually going to have an effect on less than 3% of that program. We agree that we should not be in the business of competing with the private sector, and that those activities that the private sector can do better we should contract out, and that's why we contract out for routinely over 97% of our program. Of that 3%, or under 3%, that we choose to do by using force account, over half of that money actually ends up going to the private sector anyway. Even when we do work with our own DOT employees by force account, we still have to buy materials and contract for that. We have to lease equipment from the private sector, and we oftentimes employ the services of the private sector for participating in our projects. The other thing I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about is just force account in general, and the uses that we've had in the past, and what this bill will actually affect. This bill will affect the first type of force account project that we do, which are force account projects that we transfer to, say, the Bureau of Indian Affairs or the Indian Health Service and local governments. And so that's one type of force account that this bill would affect. The second type of force account project that we do that this bill would affect would be maintenance, and that would be the projects that we do with our own maintenance forces. We have some specific line items in the capital budget and in the statewide transportation improvement program for things like bridge repair, pavement rehabilitation and whatnot, that each spring and summer we take a portion of our DOT maintenance employees and we convert them from being paid for from our general fund maintenance budget, and we pay for them from our capital budget. And those employees work for the summer essentially doing what they used to do and what they would normally do under our general fund maintenance program, but they're now doing it under a capital project. And the reason why we do that is so that we can keep our trained workforce employed and not be laying them off and having to rehire employees in the fall and hope that we get many of them back and having to train others. The second reason why we do that is because if we didn't do that, we would have a pretty serious management decision that we would have to make. We would either have to lay off employees every spring to keep a cushion in our personal services line item so that we could pay for overtime when we have major weather events in the winter, or we would keep folks employed, and in the winter we would have essentially very little or no overtime to deal with major out of the ordinary type snow events and other kinds of weather related activities. And then the third type of force account project that this would affect is kind of an offshoot of the maintenance that we do, and that's the St. Mary's type project that you've already discussed here. As you have seen in the fiscal note, there is some savings that we achieve through doing some of this work with our maintenance forces as opposed to contracting out. And we think that although we have no position on this bill, should it pass, we would certainly have some difficult management decisions ahead of us. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions that you'd like to toss our way.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Prochard, you have stated so. This force account process means that you don't want to lay off employees so that you don't have to pay overtime in the winter. But I suggest to you, sir, don't you pay overtime in the summer for the same people? And huge quantities of overtime for those same people?
Through the chair, Representative Holm, we have paid some overtime for some of our maintenance employees in the summer. And we have paid some overtime out of this. These capital line items that with the force account work. One of the reasons why we do that also is to maximize the benefit of that type of work, to complete as much of the guardrail and patching and crack sealing type work that we possibly can in the summer when the weather is agreeable for that activity.
I can follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So, if the amount of $11,180,000 a year is a savings to the state, from your information that you provided, how much total work would that mean to the private sector?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that again?
The total amount that you had for this year's force account. How much of that work could be done by the private sector, in your estimation?
Through the chair, Representative Holm. Again, that's a difficult question to answer. I'm sure if we chose to contract it all out, the private sector would be happy to fill that need and do the work. There may be a few items in there that it couldn't be done or that it would be more efficient for us to do them, but I'm sure that feasibly we could contract the work out.
Can I follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Holmes.
Would you give me an example of something that the private sector could not do for the state?
Madam Chair, if it's okay with you, I'd like to ask Frank Richards to come to the table with me and maybe help me address this line of questioning.
Yes.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Frank Richards, the State Maintenance Engineer for DOT. Through the Chair, Representative Holmes. Certainly there are features of the work aspect that that maintenance does that certainly the private sector can do. It's really a question of cost effectiveness on the level of work. If we have a particular bridge where we have one small piece of guardrail to repair as well as a bushing or a shim that we need to repair, it's that could be done by the contracting effort. Is that the dollar amount is so very small that it is more cost effective to use maintenance forces when they're there.
Through the chair. Madam Chair.
Representative Holmes.
Let's ask you another way. What kind of equipment cost do you have to buy a guardrail machine to do a small bridge? And how do you relate that cost for that equipment and amortize that cost over your projects sufficiently so that the state of Alaska gets its best use? In other words, I'm asking you, would it not be better that the public sector not take the risk of having machinery sitting around and letting the private sector take that risk or being able to amortize that over many projects rather than just one project or two projects that the state comes up with?
Madam Chair, Representative Holmes, in the question of specialized equipment, when we use that specialized equipment for force account efforts, we, in many instances, will contract for that piece of equipment. And we make the determination at that time, based on the quantity of work, whether or not it's more cost effective to contract out for the entire effort or for utilization of a piece of equipment with state forces. In the instance where we have purchased state equipment, specialized equipment to be used by state forces, it is with a clear understanding that piece of equipment will be utilized for that particular project and for subsequent projects so that it will be cost effective. And we do a review of contract rates through the published Blue Book rates and contracted rates to make sure that it is in the best interest of the state to purchase that particular piece of equipment.
Follow up, Representative.
Yes, Madam Chair. And so you're intimating to me that the purchase of equipment for DOT in the Highway Equipment Fund is appropriate, cost effective, and couldn't be done better in the private sector?
Madam Chair, Representative Holm, what I was trying to represent is that in general terms, the equipment that the state DOT operates is essentially a multi-purpose piece of equipment, whether it be an 8-yard dump truck that is able to handle snow plowing as well as material hauling. Or may it be a grader that can be used for blue top grading as well as snow plowing in the wintertime. it is very seldom that we purchase specialized equipment.
Madam Chair,
yes.
That didn't answer my question. Maybe I can phrase it a different way. let me preface this with a statement. If there weren't dump trucks in Alaska, or if there weren't cats in Alaska, and if there weren't guardrail machines or whatever in Alaska, then I might accept the argument that the state of Alaska, because of its hugeness or economy of scale of its own, could then purchase those items and utilize them in the best interest of the people of the state of Alaska. But because all of these pieces of equipment and people in the private sector, good employees, union employees, people that have talent to be utilized on these projects are available in this state, why would you think that government employees are better suited to providing this service than, say, the private sector?
Through the chair, Representative Holm, I think I'll try to answer that question. I think that I would contend that we have developed a level of efficiency with maintaining our equipment fleet and with using DOT employees to maintain roads and airports. I think that there's no question if you wanted to, you could privatize maintenance. We could debate about whether or not that's cost effective. It may or it may not be, and I don't intend to get into that today, but that's not really what this force account bill is about, necessarily. We're talking about a small portion of our capital program that we are using to do some maintenance work with, but it's a limited certain line items in the capital budget, and it's only certain activities that we can do. And most of those either don't require specialized equipment, or when they do require specialized equipment, we don't own and maintain that equipment. We choose to lease it. There may be instances. We had a partnering meeting this morning with AGC, and they brought a few instances to our attention where they believe the state has purchased specialized equipment, and either in our design and construction staff or whatever, that they believe we're not making the most efficient use of it, and the private sector may be able to do it more efficiently. We're certainly going to look into that. When instances like the ones they pointed out are brought to our attention, they may have a valid point, and we will be looking into it. But I think that, as a general rule, the force account work that we do, the type of equipment that we use is either equipment we already have that we need year-round for other purposes, and we're just shifting the funding for that equipment during that period of time that it's being used on the capital project, or it's specialized equipment that we're leasing.
Somebody else talk for a minute. What?
Representative Kukesh.
You mentioned earlier that you didn't know when the administration could take a position on this bill. Is there some kind of timeline for you to do that? I know you're just getting started with your new staff, and you have a new commissioner, and can you give us some kind of idea when you would be able to take an administrative position based on the new administration?
Through the chair, Representative Kukesh, I am hesitant to give you a specific date, but I will assure you that we have brought this to the top of the commissioner's list of items that he needs to deal with. And as you know, he was only appointed commissioner on Tuesday, and so he is well aware of this issue and talking with folks both internally and externally, and he'll be talking with the governor about this, I'm sure, particularly the Administrative Order 199, and I hope and expect we'll have some direction soon.
Thank you.
Representative Kastner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple questions. My first question is, what kind of projects take place in the state for $250,000? I understand that it's not chicken feed, but I'm wondering how extensive of a project do we cover in urban versus rural for that figure? And my other question is, can you break down in percentages the three different things that Force Account covers? So, for instance, the St. Mary's project, which seems to have gotten the hackles up of so many people, which of course bewilders me because it really was crumbs in the overall DOT budget, which is enormous. So I'm just wondering how much of a dollar figure or percentage of the budget are we looking at that has ired people?
Through the chair, Representative Capstone, I'll answer your dollar value question, and then I'll let Mr. Richards try to answer the different types of projects that might be completed for under $250,000. If you look at 2002 on the sheet that was provided to the committee, you know, our maintenance activities make up all but about $1.5 million of the a little over $11 million, $11.2 million. That was the total amount of Force Account work. Of that maintenance activities, though, a sizable portion of it was ended up in the hands of the private sector anyway. It only about 40% of it actually was related to DOT personnel and personal services, and equipment. The rest of it all went to the private sector. You're really talking, for 2002 anyway, about $1.5 million total that was Force Account projects that we transferred to other agencies that were outside of, that we did not do with our own forces in-house. And if you want to know the St. Mary's information, that's on the 2000.
And just a quick follow-up, Madam Chair. The $1.5 million out of what size budget?
$11.2 million for that year of Force Account work.
Our total budget.
About a half a billion.
$505 million.
Yeah, $505 million.
So this is about 0.05%. I mean, what is the math on that?
The actual amount that goes to DOT employees, or the actual?
Or, no, the $1.5 million
transferred to other agencies. Yeah. Like Force Account. It's maybe. I'm guessing about 0.2%, 0.3%.
0.2%. So this bill and this committee is addressing a problem of 0.2%. So I'll save it for the end of the discussion, I guess. But maybe my second question could be answered.
Through the chair, Representative Kapsner, could you restate your question in terms of what you're specifically looking for?
Madam Chair, Dennis Pouchard asked, he said that there are three components within Force Accounting, and I was wondering how much the dollar figure was for the third component.
Mr. Pouchard, do you have any papers on that topic that you might be able to formulate to the committee members, because we do have to move along?
Sure, Madam Chair. We could provide something to the committee that would, but I want to make sure we understand the question clearly. Are you looking for, just in general, what are the types of projects that are less than $250,000 that we would do, or are you looking for kind of a breakdown of the projects that we choose to transfer to other agencies?
Both.
Okay. We can provide those to the committee.
Okay. Are there any other questions for DOT? Hearing none, thank you for your testimony today. We will move on to Kevin Ritchie. You could please give us your name and affiliation for record.
Madam Chair, thank you. Kevin Ritchie with the Alaska Municipal League and Alaska Conference of Mayors. And our legislative committee, our Public Works and Facilities Committee, took a look at the bill and recommended that in its present form that they didn't recommend adoption of it. But the thing I wanted to talk about just a bit was the process that was entered into this summer, pretty much as a result of some of these discussions last year, and frankly, a long-term conflict between contracting and force account throughout the state, not just in transportation projects, but other areas as well. And there was actually a really good session covering many months and numerous meetings, which included actually most of the key affected parties from the state of Alaska, federal agencies, the associate general contractors, the AFL-CIO, the Municipal League, the Native corporations, and so on. And people really aired all of the issues. And I think St. Mary's got a fair amount of discussion, which I think is the one that the project I always hear about. I'm not an expert on this, and you maybe will hear something different from DOT. But I think that was a fairly unique kind of a project as far as force account goes. But maybe I guess in my mind, to break down the simple issues, is that in our state, a very important part of rural economies is kind of temporary type of work, like labor work and other things that might be available through force account projects. And it traditionally has been a very important part of the economy. That is a key issue. On the other side, contractors are rightfully concerned by the fact that a force account project does not have to pay Davis-Bacon wages. And there are obvious competitive issues between contractors and force account projects, which is a fair issue. That was why the group got together, because when there's two sides that both have a fair issue, obviously a great deal of discussion and compromise needs to take place. We think that did take place in the administrative order. Of course, that was under the prior administration, and I think it obviously needs to be looked at by the new administration to get their feelings on it. But to solve the local hire issue, I think that some really productive and unprecedented discussions on training rural residents came out as a result of that process. On the equity and pay issue, the Department of Labor was proposing additional salary schedules for force account projects that would more mirror Davis-Bacon in a training sense, I guess, or something. But it was bringing the two sides closer together. And so with that, I want to thank you very much for your time, and I would just recommend that we do get a reading from the new administration on how they feel this order will affect their work, and if they think it's something they'll continue or change or whatever.
Are there any questions for Mr. Ritchie? Hearing none, thank you for your testimony today. We're going to move to the off-net, go to the Fairbanks LIO. In Fairbanks, Jeff Allen.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. If you could give us your name and affiliation for the record and give us your testimony on House Bill 67.
Yeah, my name is Jeff Alling. I live in North Pole. I am owner of Alcan Builders. We're a 21-year Alaskan company. And I'm also a member of Associated Builders and Contractors. There are 147 member, Alaskan member organization nationwide. I think we have 23,000 contractor members. I have to say that my views don't necessarily represent those of ABC. But I do have my opinion of force account, and in particular, you know, my ire was raised because of what I had learned from a fellow contractor in Nome about the St. Mary's project. Just generally, we have done work statewide up and down the Yukon River along the North Slope, Cape Lisburn, out in Nome. The last job we did was in Nome. And just generally, the way a project will go is we'll bid the project probably in a worst-case scenario, a bush job. We'll set it up so that if we have problems, we're covered financially. But generally, and to speak to Mr. Kukish's question, one of the ways that we aid the local villages and towns is it's much cheaper. I mean, it's more economic for us, when we do get a bush project, to send in a superintendent and maybe one skilled leader, in our case, because we're a building contractor, that would be a carpenter, and to hire locals at the prevailing wage rate, which is the Title 36 Davis-Bacon wage rate. This is just good economic sense. The last job that we did in Nome was we worked as a subcontractor with Western Mechanical on the renovation of the hospital. We did send one superintendent in, and I believe we hired seven or eight skilled and unskilled individuals from Nome, and we were on that project for a period of 4.5 to 5 months. We had also remodeled the federal building in Nome about 10 years ago, and we did the same thing. So if there is a fear out there that locals aren't going to be hired or locals aren't going to be trained, it's pretty much without founding because for economic reasons. To put somebody up in a bush village can be anywhere from $75 a day to $150 or $160 a day. So it's much cheaper for me to hire locals. So there is that benefit to the rural community. There also is the benefit of that Title 36 Davis-Bacon wage, which the previous gentleman spoke of. They're paid a good prevailing wage. The other benefit is that we have to rent housing. Now, I don't know quite how it works for the state, but it would seem to me that the state would probably have facilities where they would house their leaders, their foremen. When we go into a village, we have to rent housing. When we go into a village, we have to ship equipment in and then ship it out again. So there's benefit to transportation. There's benefit to air transportation companies. We've got to send two or three people into these places to lead this work, and they come in and out of there several times or over the course of the season for the simple reason that, you know, we need to see them, we need to talk to them, they need to see their families. So there's a definite benefit to air transportation also. One of the other benefits is kind of an unspoken benefit is the cultural training. When we get to go from Fairbanks into some of these villages, we meet a lot of really great people, and we have established some, in some instances, some lifetime friendships with these people. So there is that benefit. The benefit to the state, in my opinion, would be the enhancement of the competitive bidding process. And I would like to say that it's my belief that the competitive bidding process often translates into added value for the state. There are some instances where it doesn't work so well, but generally I believe it helps the state out. And just generally enhancement of the free enterprise system, I think, really is something that the state should take very seriously. Although we are talking about, and I haven't done the math, maybe 0.2% of the budget here, free enterprise, and that 0.2% of the budget are very important to me as a general contractor and as a businessman. So it may not be a lot of money in the overall picture, but it is important to me, and especially important to those contractors that reside in those communities. And with that, I'll just turn it over and say thank you.
All right, Jeff, thank you for your testimony. Now, I didn't really hear you, but are you in favor of House Bill 67, or?
Well, I am in favor of it, but I guess I meant to add one other thing. There was a gentleman from the Operators Union that was here last week to give testimony, and I don't believe that he could be here today. But he did mention that to him, $250,000, a $250,000 project was a large project. And I had given that some thought, and I was glad that he mentioned it, because I would say right now in the economic climate that we're in this state, to me in Fairbanks, if the job was bid locally, a $250,000 project is a job that I would pursue. If we're in the bush, in this economic climate that we have right now, I would probably not pursue it. However, if we were in an economic climate such as what existed in like 1986, 87, 88, believe me, we would be bidding that $250,000 project.
Okay. Well, thank you for your testimony. Representative Kastner, did you have a question?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair. Thank you, Jeff, for your testimony. I was curious what rumors you had heard about the St. Mary's project that upset you, and maybe we could have DOT dispel any of those possible rumors.
Okay. As far as rumors, you know, I did talk with a contractor in Nome who hopefully is here today and will give testimony, and basically, I'll let her give her argument, but she was upset at the size of the project and the direction the state was taking out in western Alaska. So as far as rumors go, I can't really answer that, but she said that it had hurt her company in a big way. And she, of course, is a highway contractor, so that's really all I have to say on that.
Okay, well, thank you. I hope you know, and I hope she knows, that we do have a serious economic situation in rural Alaska, because 10 years ago we had on average families would make about $6,000 a year fishing. We don't even get that anymore. I mean, we are in dire straits, and this was an effort to help some of those families who really were broke get back on their feet. So I'm sorry that it hurt her pocketbook, but these are people who aren't even making. So thank you for your answer.
Thank you.
I think that that topic alone, we're dealing with an issue here that
this relates
has to do with money that goes through a forest account. So I think keeping the issues as far as rural funding and jobs, I think that the case we're looking at here, and if you look at the bill, it does not refer to anything for rural jobs out in the area. We're talking about $250,000 for a. We're getting way off base here. So I want to move
Madam
on with
Chair,
testimony.
I think it's germane because we're talking about projects in rural Alaska and across the state that are over $250,000.
We're dealing with the bill, Representative Kastner. We're dealing with the bill in front of us here, not on logistics of wages. So I want to move on now. We're going to move to.
We're elected representatives of the state, and we appreciate the opportunity to have the discussion. And
we will
I think
have
that
it.
You need to have give us the latitude of having that discussion rather than cutting us off.
Representative Kukesh, we are having it.
Well, then let us have it, and please don't limit us to our discussion.
You bet. So we will move forward now with more public testimony. Steve Weaver, Anchorage LIO. Steve, are you with us?
Yes, hello. thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Steve Weaver. I'm with the Alaska Native Health Consortium, where I work as the director of their environmental engineering program. And we're not in favor of House Bill 67. We build sanitation facilities in communities throughout rural Alaska, and we often partner with the Indian Health Service and the state to build sanitation facilities, access roads, and boardwalks. And through that process, DOT is able to piggyback on our existing projects, and they're able to deliver service at a lower unit cost and provide faster service to the citizens who need the roads because we're already there. And because we're participants in AO-199, we now have a structured training program that allows local residents to participate and help build a pool of trained construction workers in rural Alaska. So what we see as the problem with the language as written is it removes the management flexibility of DOT to work with programs such as ours to deliver better value to the citizens. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Are there any questions for Steve? Hearing none, we'll move on to up in Nome. We have Graham Story. Nome LIO, are you online?
Yes.
Okay.
My name is Graham Story. I'm with the Nome Chamber of Commerce.
Okay, and you wanted to testify on House Bill 67?
Yeah, I have a couple of comments on that. I tend to be in support of this bill, but the language seems to accept an arbitrary figure of $250,000 or less, where the strengthening, in my opinion, should come in that it should be the phrase that appears to be in the best interest of the state. Why not strengthen that or make the requirement tougher for the state to meet before they go into forced contracting? And secondly, I guess there's a representative there who keeps talking about this just being crumbs. And I would hope that the representatives in the Juneau recognize that crumbs in your budget can be quite a lot in the budgets around Alaska. And, you know, before you realize it, your entire cake is crumbed away. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move on to Jerry Drake.
This is Jerry Drake. I'm a city council member in Bethel, and I would like to come out as being adamantly opposed to this bill. In some of the previous testimony we've been hearing, you know, I heard a little bit earlier a phrase that really summed up a lot of things. When we as a contractor go out to these villages, we really benefit these people. Well, we've all heard that numerous times. And Representative Kapner is correct in that this is a very small part of the budget that we're talking about here. And one of the reasons for that is that very few communities can take on a project like this, because you have to have the equipment there to do it, you have to have the people that can do it, and so very few communities have that ability. Further, wages, I believe, are very germane to this whole debate. And one of the things that we really need to consider is that when you have a small project out in a rural community, and a contractor comes in, does the work, and leaves, you know, maybe a couple of people get hired, but not very many. You know, we all know that. You can't even debate that anymore. But let's talk about doing it by force account. Now all the people in the community are going to work. Has anybody done any study on how many people get off of welfare and things and other benefits and are able to take care of themselves while they're doing that? I'm sure that that's a heck of a cost savings to the state, and nobody's even talking about that. A lot of work over the past year went into the administrative order that's currently on the table. And I was a part of that debate during the whole thing. And I think this House bill and the companion Senate bill are just a slap in the face to all the people who worked very hard to get all that work done. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Jerry? Thank you for your testimony. We'll move to Jim Adams. Jim, are you there, please?
Yes, I am. Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay. If you could give us your name and affiliation for the record.
Name is Jim Adams. I'm the Western District Manager for the DOT out this way.
Okay, and you want to testify on House Bill 67?
Yes, I just have a short statement.
Okay.
On a much smaller scale, the Federal Preventive Maintenance Program makes a substantial difference in the condition of known area roads. Since very few STIP projects planned out this case score high enough in compensation, force account work performed under the Preventive Maintenance Program is what is saving the portion of our roads out this way now. I also note that St. Mary's was part of the area fish disaster problem, and this played a part in the decision for force account. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Was he for or against force accounting?
Jim, were you in favor of it or against the force accounting process?
I just put that out for food for thought for you guys.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. In Nome, we'll move to Judy Martison.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, Judy, if you want to give us your name and affiliation for the record and give us your testimony, please.
Okay, my name is Judy Martison, and I'm representing North Coast Construction in Nome, Alaska. and thank you for this opportunity to speak to you. I think I was referred to earlier in some testimony. We are a 22-year general contracting company in Northwest Alaska. We've lived 32 years in Nome. We've raised our children here, and we'll probably die here. Our company hires all local people. We have done village work in just about every village up and down the coast for Northwest Alaska. And we hire local horses when we go in, usually 90 to 100% local hire. But lately, we have seen our work eroded by state DOT forces, in particular the St. Mary's Road. It was not bid by competitive bid. It was done by the DOT. They did pay the villagers there less than Davis-Bacon wages, and they purchased equipment to do it indirectly through the city. There's very little work out here in Northwest Alaska, and what there is being done by the state. Our people, we've had to let go. Our local people, we can't keep them hired anymore without any contract to bid on or any work. Our equipment sits while DOT forces do the project, other than maintenance. We send our equipment out on the barge while state DOT forces is bringing equipment in. And what's wrong with this picture? Let's see, the 3% that you're talking about, the impact is much larger than this, as was previously testified by the Chamber of Commerce testimony. The force account report shows, the dollar amount that the force account report shows is skewed. 3% is labor only. Where is the equipment cost? Where's the rest of the cost? The total picture is a big impact. State and city forces are getting stronger and stronger while we are being put out of business. We used to have revenues of up to $2.5 million when we were contracting. We're down to $10,000 to $20,000, almost out of business. You know, we're looking at going to war to preserve democracy. And if what's happening now is not a definition of socialism, I don't know what is. I understand that the St. Mary's Project came about because of a poor fishing year. But I also heard that when the actual work was being performed, the people were back fishing. Another thing to note is that the villagers that we pay, when we go in and do contracts, we pay Davis-Bacon wages, which is much higher than what temporary hired state personnel are paid. And if you want your villagers to have more money, then you would want them to have these contracts. Because ultimately, the villager goes home with more money in their pocket. And it's also done under a democratic system. I could get pretty emotional about this because I'm watching our family, I'm watching our livelihood, we're watching lots of things go down the drain here. And the stronger and stronger that government becomes, and the weaker and weaker that the private sector becomes, so does our society, and so does our freedom that we have as Americans. As Americans, goes down the drain. Anyway, we're in favor of House Bill 67 to stop this problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. Is there any questions for Judy? Representative Kastner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Judy, what other contracts have you lost on account of force accounting?
Certainly the St. Mary's. You know, I can't say that we lost because we didn't get the opportunity to bid. There's not much work going on up here, and state equipment is rolling in our visit. There's work going on, but we're not a part of it. It's not out there for us to bid on. So it's hard for me to quantify exactly. But I know that St. Mary's was a big issue for us because we were really looking forward to getting to bid on that job, and then it was not put out. It was taken off the bid schedule.
I guess.
And there's not much out here.
Yeah, Judy, what other projects are being force accounted that you can't bid on? Because that's a pretty alarming figure that you said. You used to make $2.5 million and now you're making $10,000 to $20,000. What other factors factor into that?
About the only work going on out here now is maintenance. And that is in the force account report. I don't know the specific breakdown.
Okay,
Let me add something. Under maintenance, we do have a small contract for next year. So we are grateful for that.
Okay, well, I certainly hope things change for you with this new administration and his commitment to building roads. And I just hope things get better for you, and I'm sorry to hear about your loss.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay.
And I know you don't want to go here. I'll make it brief. I know that the St. Mary's fishermen were not fishing commercially the next year. I know that whatever fishing they were doing was for subsistence. And again, I'm very sorry, but that's it.
Okay, we'll move on to the off-net steward, Jacques. Steward Jacques, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Stuart Jacques. I'm a Central Environmental. I'm on the board of directors of the Association of Building Contractors. I think Jeff Allen had mentioned earlier, we're about 145, 150 member. Contract organization here in the state. I'm not speaking for the board at this point. I am in favor of the bill. As I see it, the state should not be in the business of competing with the public. We've run into this. I ran into this personally in the past about 10 years ago with the Alaska State Housing Corporation, where they started doing work internally and all of a sudden became a contractor competing against the contracting public doing work for other agencies. And to some extent, that's what the DOT is looking at here in piggybacking with other agencies. They're taking work away that would potentially be going to the public sector. One of the things I've heard several of the representatives mention is that it's taking jobs away. By not doing a force count in the villages would be taking jobs away from those villagers. I believe that's incorrect. That work is still going to occur. The jobs are still going to be there. The question is, are the villagers going to do them? That's more a matter of training than anything. If the trained people are there in the villages, then the contractors will hire them. And people can say, well, contractors come, they don't hire. The people need to be trained. I think one gentleman mentioned earlier that there's been discussion with AGC and other agencies and the state contractors in regards to doing more training, rural training. I think that's really quite a bit more of the answer if you want to keep those people employable in the bush. It does affect the survivability of local small businesses. The one representative has mentioned several times that $250,000 is a very small amount of money and a very small part of the budget. That may be true to some extent depending upon your perspective, but you have to understand that $500 million, when it's going out in contracts of $25 million, $50 million, $10, $15 million, the small local contractors, they're not able to bid those jobs. And so what they're left with are the $200,000 job, the $500,000 job, the $1 million job. Those are big jobs. Those are a viable part of their living. And so to them, that is a big number. And I don't believe this force account work is being done near as effectively by the state as it would be by the contracting sector. That's about it.
Okay, do we have any questions for Stuart? Hearing none, thank you for your testimony, and I don't believe that we have anybody else online that want to testify. Is there anybody in the audience that wanted to testify on House Bill 67? Hearing none, we will close a public comment and open it up for committee discussion. Representative Kukesh.
I appreciate the testimony of everybody today. I really would like to have testimony from the administration when the new department, the Commissioner of Transportation, gets up to speed and can give us a recommendation based on the administration. I know the Dennis Bouchard and the rest of the people here are probably working as hard as they could, but the policy decision still has to come from the Commissioner and the Governor, and I'd like to hear from that. I'm sure we all would.
For the sponsor of the bill, this bill will be moving on to Finance Committee, and I think the core of the discussions that we're not going to be dealing with the financial issue. I think the Finance Committee could take that up, but I want to just take a little brief at ease here. Did you want to give the follow-up to Representative Kukesh's statement on the governor taking act on the Administrative Order 199?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the good representative's concern here. However, I think this issue has a time. It needs to be moving through the process. Because I believe that that this new administration is going to make their own decisions as to how they're going to relate to this Administrative Order 199. And like all administrative orders, they can come and go at the whim of the governor. So I think for us to hold it for that purpose, I don't think would be prudent. So I would move that we move it out.
Any representative? Kastner.
Before we move it out, would you entertain an amendment that so many of the contractors had great points. They said they're not trying to take away jobs from local people. They want to work with communities and provide those jobs, and it's more cost efficient to have local people in those jobs. Would you entertain part of the compromise that was reached with the last working group that came up with this administrative order? They said that it's beneficial if we have pre-bid conferences and post-bid conferences where communities can weigh in and let them know how many workers they have available and who are eligible for these jobs. Would you entertain that as an amendment?
Representative Holmes?
Well, actually, through the chair, Madam Chair, probably not at this point. I think that the reason I wouldn't is because that's really a contracts issue. It's really not an issue that I'm trying to address in this bill. I'm just trying to limit DOT's ability to contract outside of the process of competitive bidding. That is my total goal. It is not to change whether or not people in one area work in a contract or don't. I mean, those are issues that I don't think we can really address in this bill. That it isn't my thrust for this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Do you have a follow-up on that, Representative?
No.
Okay. Representative Kukesh?
Earlier on, Representative Fate asked the question or said he wanted to center his debate around the amount of $250,000 or less. And I was wondering if the maker would consider an amendment to raise that amount. I know there's no magic number about it, but you know, I'd probably be very comfortable in supporting this if the amount was more than $250,000. I don't know where he got it. He can't tell me where he got that number. So if there was a magic or formula to get to $250,000, I'd appreciate the discussion. If not, I wonder if he would entertain a motion to raise that amount to, and I'll leave that amount up to him, but I'd certainly appreciate the discussion.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, I don't think so. I think at this time it's appropriate just to keep the number what it is and where it is, because it has the same number in Senate, and I think we have a potential here for having a good bill, and I'd like to keep it right where it is. So I respectfully decline.
In that case, my vote will be no on this movement.
And on that point, Representative Kukesh, this will be, it's referred to finance, and I think the dollars will speak for itself up on fifth floor. Is there a motion?
I think you made it. Didn't you make a motion?
No, go ahead.
Oh, I move this out of committee for the next committee of referral with individual recommendations, and I believe it's a zero fiscal note.
Is there any objection?
Yeah, I object.
Okay. There is objection. If we could get a roll call.
Representative Bates.
Yes.
Representative Coring.
Yes.
Representative Hines. Representative Kapsner.
No.
Representative Kukas.
No.
Representative Holmes.
Yes.
Co-chair Massett.
Yes.
Four yeas, two nays.
And so we have moved House Bill 67 out to Finance Committee. And we have no other business at this time to take up, and I would ask that members stay to sign the booklet. Having said that, we are adjourned at 2:45. Thank you.